So this was an amazing experience, being held by these loved ones around me. And over and over, the notion that I'm held, I'm guided, I'm loved by a love which is greater than I could ever imagine. And all I had to do was just open up to that and allow that healing and that loving taking place.
Today on In Good Faith, we're talking to a woman who's had a near-death experience. She's the author of Freed from the Frame, which is a memoir about that. I'm Heather Bigley in studio today with our host, Stephen Cap Perry.
Hello.
And our producer, Leah King.
Hello.
So guys, I met Mariana when I was in India. I was staying in New Delhi as a Fulbright recipient. I was with my husband, and she rented us an apartment, and she's originally from Germany, and she has one of the most fascinating lives I've ever heard. And when we talked about our end-of-life series and talking about near-death experiences, I knew immediately, I've got to call Mariana and ask her if she'll talk for us on our show.
And one of the reasons I was so happy to hear this interview, which I wasn't there when you spoke with her, but as I've listened through, is that she does bring this whole other set of Eastern experiences. I've often wondered, do people of different faiths see different things when they have these near-death experiences? And she did.
So again, this is part of our mini-series on end of life. You can go back and hear an interview with Martin Tanner, who's a KSL host, who has interviewed over 600 people about their near-death experiences. Coming up, we'll be talking with Jules Olson, who's a hospice chaplain, and Phyllis Spiegel, who's an Episcopal bishop in Provo, who studies end of life. And then we'll be having an end of life panel with Karina Tanner, who studies gerontology at BYU, Josh Rager, who's a pastor at Cross Point Church, and Saddam Mani, who is a Hindu practitioner from India. And that might be one thing we say about Mariana, is she knows a ton about Hindu cosmology. She was raised Catholic, but I wouldn't put her in one religious tradition. She's experienced with a lot. And so we open this interview with her discussing the accident that caused her near-death experience.
I was heading from Auroville in South India back to Pondicherry, and I was with my son and his girlfriend. The three of us were on a scooter, on a three-wheeler, and it was getting dark. I was leading ahead, and my son was following on the second scooter. In fact, I was crossing the busy highway as I crossed in Delhi the busy roads before. It was something which had an incredible setting because it was just the time when the sun was going down. And in India, that goes very fast. And everyone was switching on their light, almost like setting the stage for a miracle to unfold. And when I just crossed and I was moving on in line with the traffic, I was hit by this motorbike. I was blown off from my three-wheeler and was shooting up into the air, and I was landing not on the road, on the busy highway. I was landing in the Divine Mother's lap, being enveloped, being cherished, being filled, being flooded. Every fiber, every muscle, every organ was just flooded with this incredible love, which I had never experienced before.
How long did it feel like you stayed there in that experience of incredible love and being enveloped by the divine?
Eternity. I was out of the frame of time and space. It was as I was coming home. I was finally reaching home.
And then to wake up not in the lap of the Divine Mother, what was that like?
That was agony, because my son, who had meanwhile shifted me into a three-wheeler to take me to the hospital, he was calling out with such intensity for me to wake up and open my eyes. And I heard the sound, I heard his voice, but I was trying to shut it off because I did not want to lose that connection. I didn't want to be thrown out of paradise. And so when I opened up my eyes, and in fact, I mean, I could I opened my eyes, but I could not see him. I could hear him. I was severely hit. I had severe head injuries. I'd broken my neck. And I knew that there was something with my neck, and I could barely speak, but I gathered all my strength to tell him that the scooter fellow has to slow down, because they were rushing to the hospital. And I was on these bumpy roads. My neck was shaken, and my son was holding me then tighter, and his whole shirt and everything, I was bleeding profusely, and the pain was so severe that I was very tempted to pass out and go back. But there was this voice which was telling me clearly not to leave the body, to stay with the body and not run away from it. And the ride to the hospital seemed to be very long, and I was kept being tempted to pass out again. Every time I was tempted, the voice came in and said, "You need to stay with the body. If you're not staying with the body, you're going to lose it." So this carried on even after I'd been to the hospital and they were starting to figure out what happened and all. And I kept asking the doctors, "Okay, have you figured it out? Can I pass out now a while? I can't take the pain anymore. I can't take it more. I can't take it more." And they said, "Yes, yes, you go to sleep." But the voice would come and say, "Do not leave the body. Stay with the body. Go deeper. Go deeper." And there already my first lesson came, how to go deeper and deeper and deeper to find a place where it was bearable to be.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're in all of this pain and your body's been heavily traumatized. So it might be really frightening to be told, go deeper into the body.
I found a place of rest. It took a long time because it didn't work to begin with. I mean, it was a long stretch. It was not only to begin with, I mean, it took 2 days till I had my operation of the neck, and I had to fit a plate and dig bone mass from the hip to fit the chipped vertebrae. And I mean, it was a very lengthy and very dangerous operation. And so this agony, the pains were even afterwards there. And it took me some time to learn how to go even deeper and even deeper. That, and I mean, find that place of rest, or even go deeper into that dark chamber, which I later on called the dark chamber of the Divine Mother, the womb, the dark womb of the Divine Mother, where one comes very close to death. It appears to me that is the sort of final landing place where we all reach in the end.
You're listening to In Good Faith. More in just a moment.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry. When you talk about current events, do you ever feel like you have to tiptoe around people you know or maybe even family members because it seems like some topics are just like landmines? Can I even bring up this topic and have a civil discussion without starting a civil war within my family? Check out the podcast, Top of Mind, with award-winning journalist Julie Rose. Top of Mind dives into those tough topics, but it does it in a way that actually models how to have intelligent conversations, ask questions out of sincere curiosity, seeking to understand. Top of Mind is not trying to take a position and change your mind or persuade you. It is exploring. You'll come away with more empathy and clarity so that you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, even family member. Listen to Top of Mind wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. We're listening to Heather Bigley talk to Mariana Bari about her recovery from a near-death experience.
So in America, we have a fascination with near-death experiences, and often we concentrate on, I had this experience that traumatized my body, and then I went and I saw and I experienced something. We don't often focus on or pay attention to the recovery, the long, long recovery. And from what I understand, you had to heal. You had to learn how to walk again. You had to learn how to use your hands again. You had to build all the strength back up into your body. This was an incredibly long process. When I met you, how long before had been the accident?
Well, the accident was end of 2013.
Okay, and I met you in 2019. And even then, I remember having this moment with you where I was trying to open a bag and I wanted some scissors to open a bag from the store with food in it. And you were like, no, you have to open it with your bare hands. You have to keep your strength. You have to build your strength. And that's, I think, the first time you actually mentioned your accident to me, because I was trying to get the easy way out with the scissors. So even then, 6 years later, you were still like consciously thinking about your recovery. So let's talk a little bit about this recovery, what it meant for you, and again, how it helped you understand those experiences right after the accident.
Well, as you said, it was a long, drawn process, and it was a pilgrimage. It was a pilgrimage within. It was a pilgrimage to find the core, to find the healer within. And there was always calling out for help, because in the healing process, there was often one hit the bottom, and it was just things were not moving anymore. And it didn't look like I would be able to get out of the wheelchair. It didn't look like I would be able to walk again or something. And in that sort of process of developing the capacity to surrender brought in a very different dimension. Because before, I was always onto that sort of framework of either or. Suddenly there was this thing of the need of surrendering and accepting what happened. If this is the way I'm going to be, if I'm going to live my life in a wheelchair, it is okay. I surrender to it. I accept it. I'll deal with it. I'll be okay with it. But at the same time, keeping that faith alive, calling out for the grace, calling out and seeing in a visualizing that I would be able to dance again, climb mountains again, to swim again. Having that capacity at the same time in that process of surrender. Because before it was, if I surrender, that means I'm sitting back, God will do everything, and if it doesn't happen, then it's His will. So the whole relationship with the body changed. I had to change the attitude in which I was dealing with my body. I had to love my body in spite of hating it for being so miserable, so being so incapable. I had to deal with the fact what it means to be an invalid, to be somebody who cannot live out of the strength of that body anymore. I had to deal with my body as a small child who responds, and I have to listen, and I have to go the body's way, not my fixed idea of pushing through things in the fastest way possible. My whole way of relating to the body had to change. I had to start loving the body. I had to stand up and fight for it. I had to tell the doctor, this is not going to work for me. My body is not willing to take this. I would have to tell the physiotherapist what my body wanted and what my way of the body is of healing. I had to go on a different path, which I didn't know. I just had to listen very carefully and be in tune with the body, being very, very close, not being in my mind and spinning around, but being with the body in that moment, sensing the body and perceiving what the body had to say to that. And that way, I mean, the body tells its own truth. The body doesn't lie. And I had to trust my body more than anybody else. And talk to my body, talk to these different parts, because they all had something to say. I had to tune into it and be available to what it said, even if it was incredible and didn't make sense at that moment.
Mariana, I'm wondering if you were raised in a religious home.
Yes, I was raised in a very Catholic believing home in a village in West Germany. And there was a deep belief, and there was rituals about Mother Mary. We used to pray the rosary and all, and so strong that I was convinced that I wanted to become a missionary doctor in India or in Africa. And that all fell apart with the age of 14. My whole notion what life is about and what God is about was that there is a caring God, there's a loving God, and he will not create harm. He will not allow that anything happens to me. And since I was very deeply linked with my grandfather, he was in the neighboring village, he died in one night, and it took about 3 days till he was found. And it was really shocking for us. And of course, there was a lot of guilt of not having looked after him. And the way he died, I was so frustrated. I was so shocked. I felt that there can't be a God who is so uncaring. And I made God responsible for all the misery in the world. And I just chucked him out of my life.
So how did you come back to spirituality? How did you come back to the divine?
Well, after life took me to India, I was very enchanted by the way religion, spirituality was openly lived. I mean, I would be sitting on my rooftop and I would hear people chanting, people singing, people lighting their incense. I was surrounded by it. And then I was working in a school with a spiritual background. It was part of the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. And there every morning started with prayers, every morning started with meditation and all. And slowly it was seeping in that there was a deep longing for that connection, for that unity, which I had as a child. And I felt like I was thrown out of paradise with that decision which I'd made myself. And something in me was longing to get back to that somehow. Of course, it took some time to just remove all the pain, to look at all that, what drove me away from it. That had to be cleared out gradually. And slowly, I opened up. I started reading the scriptures. I rediscovered yoga, which I had already as a 14-year-old in Germany, my first course. So that also helped a lot. And it had then suddenly a very different meaning. So opening up slowly, step by step, to all these systems, these ways, these visions, these realizations.
As you had children, did you find becoming a mother, becoming a parent, did that in any way impact your spiritual life?
Oh, yes, it impacted very much. Because I suddenly had to decide what I wanted to reflect to my children. What sort of belief system? That was one thing, and I decided to keep it very open. So I would suddenly find myself celebrating all the Catholic, all the Christian festivities, and with all the stories, with all the background, that suddenly came alive again, and I was exposing my children to this. And then the other thing is, my son, when he was 3 years old, he kept talking about his past lives. And in the school I was teaching, I was encountered a number of 3 years old who remembered their past life. And for me, it was that I felt it's just stuff which kids talk, but it wasn't like that. And then, of course, I would slide into past life experiences going somewhere, and suddenly a whole life would unfold in front of me. So that was setting into motion as well.
What was that experience the first time? How did that happen, that you would have a past life unfolded for you?
I was accompanying my husband with a group of students into Vrindavan. Vrindavan is an old Krishna place. And we were walking down the street and suddenly a door opened and a stream of widows walked out, all dressed in white. And I stood there, I froze. And I looked into the eyes of one of them and suddenly a whole past life sequence was unfolding. And I don't know for how long I stood there. The widows had gone, the group of students had also gone with my husband, and I felt completely lost and shaken up because this was something I couldn't deal with. This was stuff which I didn't believe in and I'd never experienced before, and it just blew my mind. And then afterwards, I kept falling into that existence in dreams, or I would wake up, or I would just stand somewhere, and suddenly another flashback of that came. And after that first one, several would come. I would walk into old Delhi, and suddenly I knew exactly what's around the corner in an area where I've never been. I knew there's this house, and there's this and that, and I would get frightened and go back. And so I can't deal with this. This is too much. A sort of mental frame, that logical frame that holds us, just blue completely.
So what helped you reconcile those visions with a new frame?
It took a while. I remember the kids who were talking so playfully about it, and I started realizing there must be something. If a three-year-old can so playfully talk about it as it would be the most normal thing, and not just one, several ones, then I started studying it, and I noted it down what these three-year-olds had to say, and I found it suddenly something which is real, something which is true, and it's not just the fact that I was maybe too long under the Indian sun. It's something which is something that I can integrate into myself and open up to it and see what happens. And a lot of whiteness came in. I suddenly would walk into old buildings, palaces and all, and I could start going backwards and forwards in time because there was that mental tight frame had opened up. And I could, with a little effort, just experience how it must have been 300 years ago in that place, what was happening.
So there's this idea that all of us have continued on, like we have an eternity behind us and we have an eternity before us. I think this is such important context for your accident and what you experienced after the accident, and because you had this foundation already, a way of thinking about yourself and thinking about your place in the universe, so that when the accident happens and you have this miraculous experience, you were open to it. You were ready. You were sort of prepared for it.
Surely it was. And I must add also that the night before the accident, I was sitting at the seaside. I was at a crossroad and I was calling out to the universe to give me a sign, what is the right way. And then I was in agonizing pain and wondering what this was all about and almost sliding into my victim role, that life is there to crush me down. And I suddenly remembered this was the answer from the universe.
I think of you as this really capable person. I'm sure you were really capable before the accident. And then you're put into this position, you said earlier, of being an invalid. How did that change your relationships with the people around you? And did you learn anything about your relationship to the divine through that experience?
Well, first of all, the relationship with people around me was so caring. So I was so much looked after. Everybody was right there to be with me. And I was looked after day and night. There was my son, my daughter, my husband, who went out of their way to just be with me and help me to go through this phase, because it was unpredictable. I would wake up and be in such agony because I wouldn't have slept the whole night because of the pain. And my son would come in with a beautiful piece of music and play to me. He would just look at me and he knew exactly what I'd gone through the night before, and lift me out of this agony stage, the beautiful piece of music where I suddenly realized, and even if I can't dance anymore, my whole body is dancing. My fingers, my cells, everything is dancing. So I had the most beautiful care around me. My sister would fly in from Germany to be with me and look after me, to pitch in. So this was an amazing experience, being held by these loved ones around me. And then, of course, over and over, the notion that I'm helped, I'm guided, I'm loved by a love which is greater than I could ever imagine. And all I had to do was just open up to that and dive in deeper and deeper in it and allow that process to happen, to allow that healing and that loving taking place.
That was Heather talking to Mariana Bari, the author of Freed from the Frame, a memoir about her near-death experience. A theme that I found in this interview was the idea of being held. It started with, in the near-death experience, she was held by this divine mother, and then when she was re-entering her body and going deeper and deeper, she found this dark place of safety, like Heather was talking about before. And then she found that same sense of safety with her family. And I think that's a really important message for us, that we can find these aspects of the divine within the people that we love.
you know, when I knew Mariana, she's super capable, running this household. She was teaching at a school, just everywhere and in charge of everything. And the universe seemed to say to her, that's good. But you know what you really need is to develop these relationships with your loved ones and to really, really let them take care of you. And that is, for her, a difficult lesson for a variety of reasons. And that would be a difficult lesson for me, too. And that she comes out of it feeling peace and love is maybe a witness to me about how the divine wants to work in our lives.
And she talks several times, especially at the end, about allowing the experience, because we usually want to control or decide or determine, allowing the experience of life, whatever it is, to be. And I was thinking about, she's in pain, she's being carried in this jostling three-wheeled vehicle over a very bumpy road, and she wants to just pass out. And she's being told by this voice, stay with the body. Not just stay, go deeper. And then she's at the hospital, like, can I pass out yet? Yeah. The doctor said, you're fine, you're in good hands, go to sleep. But something says, stay with the body, stay with the body. I was thinking how I'm sure I would interpret whatever out-of-body or near-death experience I would have according to the way I was taught.
Yeah.
And here she did have sort of a Catholic tradition growing up. Then she started studying Eastern philosophy. And the whole idea that it's important, something about the body is really important with the soul, with the spirit, however you define those parts. I loved thinking about it in a new way and hoping that I would be open to say, by the way, here I am in the next life. I don't have a clipboard that says, I know everything, but willing to be surprised and to learn. So I'm going to end as we began with Mariana saying, all I had to do was just open up to that and dive in deeper and deeper in it. To me, that's the word faith. That's trust. Allow that process to happen, to allow the healing and that loving taking place. Many thanks to Mariana Bari for speaking with us. Our episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, and Josh Orton. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, Lauren Sandberg, and Ashton Parkinson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a comment or review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and help spread the word. By the way, we do Instagram Lives, and we always let you know before these go live, so follow us on Instagram at In Good Faith Podcast. It's sort of a fun way that is not a full interview, but you can see what we're up to. Actually, we're usually on the roof of the building with beautiful mountain scenery behind us, so we hope you'll check that out. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry. When you talk about current events, do you ever feel like you have to tiptoe around people you know or maybe even family members because it seems like some topics are just like landmines? Can I even bring up this topic and have a civil discussion without starting a civil war within my family? Check out the podcast, Top of Mind, with award-winning journalist Julie Rose. Top of Mind dives into those tough topics, but it does it in a way that actually models how to have intelligent conversations, ask questions out of sincere curiosity, seeking to understand. Top of Mind is not trying to take a position and change your mind or persuade you. It is exploring. You'll come away with more empathy and clarity so that you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, even family member. Listen to Top of Mind wherever you get your podcasts.